Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuning in to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy presents the Free Thinkers Society podcast from when I was the producer alongside the host and creator, Mike Romanelli, who you know and love from the Dojo of Comedy in Morris Plains, New Jersey. And what you're about to hear are three interviews conducted on the Free Thinkers Society podcast. You can listen to the full interviews. Just search the Free Thinker Society podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Our first segment is with Chad Stemke. The second is with Derek Bros. And the third with Zach Voorhees. And if you need more information, you can find it in the episode description. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this special My Family Thinks I'm Crazy presentation of the Free Thinker Society podcast.
Formation of Stargate. So put that name down in your books, because I think you're going to hear a lot about it. Formation of Stargate. Formation of Stargate. Formation of Stargate. Of Stargate. Of Stargate.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I have to say I felt the same way. I was in Detroit, I want to say it was about 6 years ago. And I have to say I had that same the guy who was taking me around, he was like, it was some weird like hippie commune thing. And he was like almost trying to like, I don't know if he was trying to scare me about how dangerous the city, this area was. And I never had the feeling of fear. If anything, I just had a feeling of, it was just felt amazing. This place felt alive, even though there wasn't many people around when I was there. So I did have that feeling. I was wondering more about in the lakes and where these portals possibly are. So is that where there's more of an eerie feeling? I know, like, I can just go by myself how I feel. Like, when I'm in Sedona, Arizona, I have a feeling, I feel something there. And people talk about portals and vortexes there. And the energy just feels like, whoa, like it feels almost whirling and different. I wonder if that's, is it more of a creepy, eerie feeling where these portals may be? By the lakes?
For me personally, I don't consider it creepy and eerie. I consider it, to me, it's incredible. I love it.
Okay.
To your average, no, it wasn't. I wouldn't say your average person, but to somebody who wasn't expecting it or not aware that they might get that feeling, they might take it a totally different way. For me, I'm out there looking for this stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm looking for that.
That's true. So it gets you excited.
Well, yeah, I'm looking for magnetic. Right. I'm trying to find that magnetic portal above the stone circle. But, you know, for your unsuspecting tourist that's driving their boat over it and shouldn't say they feel the same.
Yeah. Well, that's
especially if their engine quits.
Yeah. I might be getting a little too out there right now with some of this question. Yeah.
Not at all, Mike. This is a free thinker society, brother.
No, absolutely.
No,
it's how we do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's really just amazing, man. And it's obviously sounds like the Bermuda Triangle, and it's just wild. And do people, has there been anything recent happened? Any missing things in the last 5 years, or has it slowed down? Actually, I'm sorry. Before I ask that question, is there any high occurrences of crafts or anything in the skies happening?
Oh, UFOs, man. The UFO sightings are huge over the Great Lakes and Michigan in particular. It's actually originally what got me into all of this is I had UFO sightings, which led me to the Star Ancestors, which led me to the ancient mounds. But okay. Yeah, UFOs are very frequent, so to speak, around here.
Absolutely.
Okay. Project Blue Book was here. And if you ever heard the story of J. Allen Hynek talking about swamp gas, that all took place here in Michigan. Big flaps.
Well, and I remember hearing
right over Holland, Michigan.
I remember hearing you say that they were so upset, the town, by this final conclusion that they ran this guy out of town, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, which just goes to show the
chasing these things around.
It just goes to show what the average person's take on these things it was and how it's altered, because now people are probably so less likely to even be outside and looking up at the stars than they were back then. But you really see like the community support each other. No, we're not crazy. We all saw this thing. Don't tell us we're wrong.
And that's exactly what they did, man. There was like a giant conference after, I think it was the third day, and the police chasing it. They had helicopters chasing it. They had it on weather radar. So they had this huge conference, and they thought for sure J. Allen Hynek was going to come in there after the 3 days of going around talking to people and tell them something. And they told him it was swamp gas. So, like you said, there was a huge uproar that made him get out of there. They left town, basically. And it was actually that case that supposedly J. Allen Hynek started to change his mind and his framework with future cases and be a little more forthright. But that was the one that he gave him that great explanation of swamp gas over the Great Lakes, which aren't a swamp, by the way. It's a lake.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, Mike, you asked a really good question, then you jumped ahead to a different topic entirely. Chad, I want to re-ask the question that Mike asked that was so good. What's the situation like now? Have there been, because the human trafficking conversation is probably more out there than ever. People are worried. People are seeing the amount of people that go missing and probably attributing to criminal activity more often than anything nowadays. But are there still strange, weird disappearances like the ones you just told us?
Yeah, relatively recent. Like you said, with the trafficking stuff, it gets a little more trickier nowadays when we start talking about people. So in that case, I like to resort to the planes and the ships. Because when the plane or ship disappears, it's another story. So as far as recent, the most recent good one I can think of close to me, it was 1998. So it's pretty recent. We had modern technology at that point.
But
right close to where I live in Traverse City.
Go ahead.
Good. Let's say right close to where I live in Traverse City, there's a giant bay where they have an air show every year. And in 1998, it's called the Cherry Festival. They had the guys come in for the air show, and there's a particular guy, his name was Don Scaler, and he came in, and he was going to fly his Czechoslovakian MiG around for the first time. He's been looking forward to this air show, and he was out flying around the bay doing a practice run, and he was on radar the entire time, and all of a sudden disappeared off radar, and that was it. Never returned. We're talking just offshore, and instantaneously, this was 4th of July, so they had the Blue Angels in town for the air show, so they had the Blue Angels out there looking for them. They had the local Coast Guard out there with choppers and boats. They had the police out there, and this is all instantaneously. It was on the news, so all the tourists and their local boats were out there scouring the lake, and there was just never no sign of this plane or this guy. There's no oil slicks. no debris. They raked the bottom of the lake for years trying to find this. And to this day, they have not found it. And the craziest part of the whole story to me is I have this on my website under this article. If anyone wants to go see it, it's called The Great Lakes Triangle. The Quincy pilot, the state police did an interview with the widow of this guy, the pilot. And the state police literally told her, the Great Lakes Triangle must have got your husband.
Oh, wow.
I had this on video. And I had no clue the state police even knew what the heck the Great Lakes Triangle was. And the fact they had the nerve to tell this lady that, well, maybe the Great Lakes Triangle got it. It was just weird.
Wow.
It was just weird, a little broadcast.
That is weird.
super weird. But yeah, so when these entire planes or entire boats disappear and there's like instantaneous responses and you still don't find nothing, that's when it gets weird to me. And this happened to be, and I always point out this could be coincidence, but this happened to be directly over an area where there are two ancient stone circles. And I always point out these stone circles, I think, may have been built in ancient times over magnetic anomalies, but these ancient stone circles are now underwater. And for whatever reason, this plane disappeared in the exact same area as these underwater stone circles that I think mark magnetic anomalies.
Wow. So right where the plane was, where it lost radar on the radar, is right where this circle is underneath the water.
Exactly. There's two.
Wow.
One in Traverse City where the plane took off from, and then there's one in Beaver Island. And the plane disappeared exactly halfway between these two stone circles that are aligned to each other.
Yeah, that's got to be. Is there any images of these circles that anyone can see?
Yes, absolutely. There's one on Beaver Island. Yep, Beaver Island Stone Circle. And then there's one in Grand Traverse Bay. They call that one the Lake Michigan Stonehenge front.
Wow.
I warn everybody, when you look that up, if you Google Lake Michigan Stonehenge, you're going to probably get some false images that look like a literal Stonehenge underwater with this diver. Those aren't the right pictures. They're just giant boulders arranged in a circle.
Okay.
They're absolutely there.
The Beaver Island, Chad, the Beaver Island Stone Circle, am I on the right site here? They say that there are also strange stone carvings that seem to be indicative of an advanced culture moving these things around and having the ability to work the stones in kind of a precise way.
Absolutely, yeah. The stone circle in Beaver Island, there's carvings on it, but center stone in particular, they think there might be like a map, an ancient map of Michigan on it. There's a couple thunderbirds on it. Even more interesting is the underwater circle that's in Traverse City. When that scuba diver went down there and took images of the largest stone, there's a giant mastodon carved onto it, which is no question. The archaeologists of the state of Michigan said, yep, that's a mastodon. There's no question. So we can at least date this stone circle to 10,000 years ago when it would have been above water.
Wow. So that's etched. It's actually etched in the stone of a mastodon, and this is underwater now? That sounds wild.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds wild.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's got to be something.
Absolutely. So I was just going to say it's in a protected location. Like, we know it's in Grand Traverse Bay, but they don't give us the exact coordinates because they consider it a Native American heritage site at this point.
Mm.
But, you know, we know within a quarter mile or so where it's at.
Right. Yeah, and it is interesting that there's this woolly mammoth. We were just talking, Chad, and I mentioned that the dog man, and I don't think we ever got back to that, but here we are now. Speaking of strange creatures, anomalous creatures, woolly mammoth isn't anomalous. It is kind of strange that they would have some sort of carving of it. It shows that, if anything, that either they're much more ancient than we think, or the woolly mammoth is much more recent than we think. But when it comes to cryptids, the science is out. I would place my bets that just like there's UFO sightings and strange disappearances, there's got to be strange cryptid circumstances going on there too. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong, Mark. Actually, you're not wrong. So we have your classic Bigfoot sightings, more so in the Upper Peninsula. But here in Michigan, the big cryptid is what they refer to as the Michigan Dogman.
Oh, let's hear about this.
It's kind of strange. Well, this is kind of weird because I would have never, when I lived in Detroit, I would have never known or talked about the Michigan Dogman. I never heard of him. But I moved up north, way up north from Detroit about 10 years ago. I now live in the middle of the woods in a real small town. But long story short, when I first moved in my house, the very first week I moved in, I had this strange dream, and I don't usually talk about dreams, but I had this strange dream that I was standing out on my deck and I was looking down toward my barn, which is about 100 yards away, and I saw this glowing set of red eyes. And as I'm trying to focus in on these red eyes, this thing comes lunging, flying at me, whatever you want to say, till I wake up realizing I was like this. At that point, I called it a werewolf. I didn't know what the hell I woke up and thought I had a werewolf dream, but it was so weird and scary. It was weird going outside in the dark and looking at my barn for a couple of days. And I'd never been scared of a dream before that either. Well, anyway, we just moved here. So my wife had gotten a job at the local restaurant as a waitress. And she happened, this is probably 2 or 3 days later, comes home and she's like, I heard these lumberjacks all talking about they were scared to go in the woods. And it was because they seen this dog man-like creature. And I was like, you got to be kidding. So I went to the computer and actually for the first time typed in dog man on it, popped up Michigan dog man. And there's a freaking picture of this black wolf-like creature with glowing red eyes, just like I had seen in my dream a couple nights before. Well, come to find out, a couple days later, she's waitressing again, and now there's some line workers, some electric workers, and they're having the same freaking discussion. And I asked them what they're talking about, and they told me, just jokingly, kind of, that they're afraid to go because of this dog man in the woods. So she's come home and she's like, I don't know if they're pulling my freaking leg or what, you know, but they asked her, they goes, well, where do you live? And she told them kind of where we live. And I won't say the exact name, but we'll call it Meridian Road. And they're like, you live off freaking Meridian Road? And we live off this little dirt road way outside of town. And they're like, do you know what the Meridian Mauler is? She's like, no, what the fuck's the Meridian Mauler? Anyway, they think this dog man, like my little corner, there's only two houses off my road, mine and another house that's abandoned. And my Meridian Road, this thing is called the Meridian Mauler. So for a year, so I'd go out, this kind of half jokes, but half serious. Me and my wife would get our cowboy hats on, our video recorders on, and get all stoned and go out on Meridian Mauler hunts. Looking for this guy, never found shit, but to this day, I still hear story. Now my wife's working at the high school with some of the troubled kids, we'll say, and it was a couple of weeks ago. She's like, kids are all talking about the dog man again. And she's like, I tried to tell them that my husband knew about the dog man. They're like, well, does he know about the interdimensional dog man? The kids are all into the dog man. It's the thing, like you said, there's the rumor, legend goes up here every 7 years he's supposed to reappear or whatever,
right?
But yeah, man, the dog man's their big thing up here. Big dudes are talking about being scared to go in the woods, which blows my mind.
Yeah, Mike, earlier I was telling Chad that another podcaster who lives in Michigan told me that every 10 years, with the year ending in 7, so every like 2007, 2017, mm-hmm. and so on, this mm-hmm. dog man appears. And who knows, maybe that's just a part of the, if somebody spun that into the folklore. But wow, yeah, I would be just as scared, Chad. I don't blame you. Even if it's just a dream, especially considering if it's an interdimensional entity, how do we know that it wasn't on your property and its energy signature was so powerful that you interacted with it in your dream while you were asleep, and it maybe was just rummaging around in your yard looking around?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I can go with that, man. I could go with a leftover memory, leftover energy on the landscape. I could go with any of that for sure. But
certainly, yeah, strange.
I mean, one of those things that just fell into my lap. I would have never, when I started doing this other research, had connected it or thought that someday I'd be talking about a dog man. But here's what it is.
Yeah. Any of the people, like any of the guys, the lumberjacks or whatever, were scared? Any of them have sightings or just they're just scared of it because it's just like the legend?
Well, I don't know if she ever asked them. To me, I thought they had sightings because I can't see any lumberjack. Like, I wasn't scared of the legend. I ain't as big as these big lumberjacks. And when I found out about it, I went out there with my video recorder looking for them.
Yeah.
So I can't see just the legend. I can't see these guys just the legend, especially with a couple of them trying to be cool with each other.
Exactly.
I think one of them they had to have some kind of experience, I would think.
Yeah, someone had to see something right for them to be that scared. Yeah, for sure. That's something, Mark.
Or they could have just been messing with my wife. Who knows?
Yeah. That's another thing. They definitely can. When I was a kid and I moved into the neighborhood I moved from a more urban into more of a, it's really more suburban, but to me, it seemed like the country. Freaked me out. They told me about this hook man thing and I believed it. And they took me out there and somebody was waiting out there with the lantern. So they got me the right perfect time and they switched. And I was so freaking scared. They didn't tell me for weeks that it was a joke. I was petrified, but so it was a good hoax that everyone was in on, and they got me really good. But, you know, I was just thinking, Mark, like with where I am in New Jersey, like I would love to talk to some people about the Jersey Devil, because that's, I haven't heard about that one in a while, but I'd like to get into that. But cryptids are wild, and I think that everything's kind of all connected personally with the whole triangle and the energy, and possibly I like what you were saying about interdimensional, because I'm thinking some of these things may be interdimensional.
Well, on Jersey, Chad and I were talking about the energy vortex and this pentagram sort of ley line that Peter Shampoo shows in his book. And he also talks about this concept of an arc. I was just researching yesterday that some very prominent men, the founders of the New Haven colony where I live in Connecticut, actually my hometown, one of the guys who's pretty famous as being a governor of that colony from my hometown, moved to Jersey and founded a town called New Ark, which has been translated over time to Newark, right? But New Ark is symbolic in this sort of occult architectural toponomical language that Chad is researching as well. Maybe not specifically in New Jersey, but Chad, has New Jersey come up at all, or do you know anything that connects New Jersey to what you've been researching?
No, but you kind of rang a bell when you just said Newark. There's Newark, Ohio, I've researched, and that's one of the largest areas of Earth's mountains in the Midwest.
Really?
I don't know if you could draw any type. Yep, I don't know if you could draw a connection between that or not, but that's where I think the Great Circle Mound is, and all the geometric mounds are all in Newark, Ohio.
Yeah. Well, and certainly when you look at
New Jersey, no.
No, and that's all right. When you look at these names, typically the founders of certain towns will name their town after maybe where they were born or where they had just come from. And yeah, New Ark is definitely an occult idea, this whole idea of building the new Jerusalem. But maybe let's take it back to Detroit. Chad, you want to tell us a little bit about this Hart Plaza and fill Mike in on how they created this Stargate there?
Oh, yeah, Hart Plaza. The first thing I found when I first started researching is how the plaza itself was aligned to the constellation of Orion and the Giza Pyramid by utilizing the different pieces of architecture. So you have the amphitheater, the Horus and Sun fountain, and a pyramid that aligned precisely to the Giza pyramids. And then there's a causeway that leads to a giant obelisk that's identical to the causeway that leads to the Sphinx. So you have what I call the Orion Correlation, and that was built in the 1970s by Osamu Noguchi. Then in 2001, they added a couple new pieces for Detroit's tricentennial celebration. They added what's called the Transcending Monument. And this thing looks like a giant stargate that sits right at the front of the plaza. It looks literally like a science fiction stargate. So then you got the transcending Stargate, and at the back of the plaza, they added the gateway to freedom. So some more gateway symbolism.
So when was this constructed? Is this something that's been there for a while or something newer?
Yeah, the actual plaza itself was constructed in 1974, and that included the amphitheater, the horse and sun fountain, and the pyramid, as well as the pylon. So in the 70s, the whole Orion correlation was built. And then in 2001, the Stargate was built. The Gateway to Freedom was put in place. And a couple new signs to go along with the old monuments.
And when it was built in the 70s in the amphitheater, how soon after that were there like strange things going on? Because I remember hearing you tell a story about David Bowie and a concert. Could you maybe fill Mike in on that?
Yeah, that's a good story. Actually, that is as it was being built. So nearly Osamu Noguchi would have been outside building this, directly next door is what was called Kobo Hall. And this is like a concert venue. This is also the same spot that Dr. Martin Luther King eventually gave a speech at. And David Bowie was playing a two-night show there. And on his way into town, David Bowie had heard, at his hotel room before the show, David Bowie seen on the news a report that a UFO had just crashed outside of town and that the local army and police were on it. And they would have more news at 11. So David Bowie went and played his show at Kobo Hall. And this is all in a book by David Bowie's wife, by the way. So David Bowie goes to Kobo Hall to play his show that night. And partway through the show, he stops the show and he talks to the crowd. He says, "You know what, Detroit? I heard there's a crashed UFO in town. And I just have this feeling that it wasn't the only one. I feel like there's one hovering above us right now. So I'm going to play the most incredible show you've ever seen and put out this vibe so they can feel it." So he goes on to put on this crazy show and goes back to the hotel room. And the news comes back on that night and says, "Sorry, we had to fire the newscasters that were on previously at noon. They got fired for pulling a prank on the town. There's no valid UFO. It was just a prank that their newscasters were pulling on you." David Bowie says, "Bullshit, that ain't true." So he sends his assistant out the next morning around Detroit. He's like, "Go find me the biggest telescope you can find." And they got a big old telescope and they mounted it in the moon roof of David Bowie's limo. So as they were leaving Detroit, they were searching for these UFOs out of the moon roof with this telescope. And this is the exact same time that Osamu Noguchi would have been outside orientating our flag out to the pyramids in Orion.
Wow.
All kinds of these weird stories. Any one story could be goofy, but you know, when there's all these stories, there's all kinds of stories like that, it starts to become crazy.
All right, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, Hims. If you need a boost in the bedroom, Hims has got your back. They're there to help you out with personalized ED treatments, and it's all online. They've changed men's healthcare by providing you with access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your home. Hims provides access to a range of doctor-trusted ED treatments like chewable hard mints, Viagra, and Cialis, and their generics for up to 95% cheaper. So this process is 100% online and there's no need to go visit a doctor. So you just answer a series of questions, no insurance is needed, and you get it all for one low price. Don't just take it from me. Hims has got thousands of trusted subscribers and Hims can help you find the ED option that works for you. So start your free online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/crazy. The products mentioned are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Prices varied based on product and subscription plan.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Actually interviewed for a second time by this guy named Robert Terrell. He's one of the founding members of the Finders, and I interviewed him back in, I want to say, the fall of 2018 when I was working on what would end up becoming my documentary, Who Will Find What the Finders Had, which is about an hour long look into the Finders cult story and trying to follow up on some of the threads that never got pulled. And so I interviewed this man, Robert Terrell, who again was the right hand man of the founder of the Finders, all kinds of weird connections to intelligence agencies, and in some ways was and still is the spokesman for whatever's left of the Finders. And so he agreed to meet me back then, and we did an interview, we included it in the documentary. But at the time when the way it happened is, I was driving through Florida in 2018, and I was actually finishing up a documentary on Jeffrey Epstein. And so we stopped at Jeffrey Epstein's house and we filmed the scene outside of his house. And then I was kind of already anticipating, okay, the next thing I'm going to do is look into this Finders cult. And I was already doing some preliminary research. And I found that this man, Robert Terrell, who was, like I said, really heavily quoted from the group as their spokesperson back in the 80s when this incident first happened, that he happened to be living like literally 30 minutes from where we were when we were just driving through on our way out. And so just sort of synchronicity, I did some research, found his number, called him up, and he agreed to do an interview. But when I sat down and did that interview, which is about an hour long, and there's clips of it used in the documentary, I was still just getting into my Finders research. So I didn't really fully know all the details just yet. So I was doing a good job of just being objective and letting him answer the questions as he likes to. But my thought had always been afterwards, if I would have known the things I knew now, once my documentary was completed, I would have pushed back on this particular answer he said, or I would have said, hey, let me follow up with this question. But at the time, I didn't really know as much, so I just kind of let him say his thing, and that was that. But ultimately, a couple years after the documentary came out, I've still been keeping my eyes and ears connected to the Finders world and still trying to find anybody from back then we'd speak. And we were in Florida again, and I decided to reach out to Toby Terrell, Robert Terrell, and he agreed to do another interview. And I actually just released it about, I think, a month or so ago.
So, Derek, before we get too deep into this, do you mind giving the listeners just a little bit of history on the Finders?
Yeah, absolutely. So the short version is in 1987, there was two well-dressed men seen at a park near Tallahassee with several children who were described as disheveled, dirty, bug bites, kind of just looking like hungry and hadn't just all looking a mess, right?
Yeah.
And so some anonymous tipster calls and says, hey, there's some weird scene going on. There's a van with these two guys that are in suits and they've got all these kids with them. The cops end up showing up and they interrogate them. They arrested the two men and that arrest, and then of course taking the kids in, that arrest led to an international story that I was able to go back and find newspaper clips from all the major papers in 1987, international papers talking about this. It became like a story internationally because there was accusations coming out of these men potentially being involved in some sex trafficking cult and abuse of the children. And there was satanic accusations and there was accusations of connections to intelligence agencies, U.S. intelligence agencies and foreign intelligence agencies. So it became like a really big story for, I'd say, a week or less. Washington Post, New York Times, all of them reporting on it, like cult being investigated. The men were held, I think, for 45 days or something like that. The kids were taken in and they were interviewed and asked all kinds of questions. And yeah, in the end, they decided to let the two men go. They said it was a misunderstanding. And that was it. That's the end of the story. Okay, Finders was just part of the satanic moral panic of the 80s. There's nothing there. People were just paranoid because they saw some pictures of goats being killed or something. That's sort of the mainstream version of events. And then that's it. And like it disappears from 1987 after that. There was in 1993, a few years later, a second investigation that came up where the government actually there was enough noise being made after the Finders case was attempted to be kind of a memory hold that they had to do a second investigation in 1993. But of course, in that investigation, they didn't really look deeply and they just said, yeah, we looked into it. It's still fake. There was nothing to it. And so the reason there wasn't a second investigation is because there was only one real officer, maybe a couple others, but one for sure, that was trying to speak out and say, hey, actually, there's a lot more going on than what you guys are being told. His name was Ramon Martinez. He was a U.S. Customs agent. And so when these men were arrested in Florida and taken in and questioned everything, they were very quickly connected to, okay, there's this group that we call the Finders. And the Finders had an apartment complex and in D.C., Washington, D.C., which actually is kind of crazy. Like I put it on the map on the location of where the Finders were staying. And it's less than a mile from Comet Ping Pong, which is just like another kind of interesting thing in the DC area. And they also had a farm in West Virginia. And so anyways, when they were originally arrested, the DC cops called the Florida cops and like, hey, we think these people might be connected to this cult we're investigating. Can you tell us more? They get a warrant to go raid the Finders warehouse and the Finders apartment complexes. And since there was potential, or there had been like accusations of potential child trafficking or international travel, the U.S. Customs Agency got involved. And so Ramon Martinez was one of the agents assigned to go with the Washington Metro Police as they did a warrant, serving a warrant on one of the Finders warehouse. And so Ramon Martinez was present for this whole investigation, and he started taking detailed notes of what he witnessed. And what he witnessed, according to his U.S. Customs report, and I have all these reports in the Finders archive, which people can download for free. He basically described seeing at the Finders warehouse, there was instructions on buying children from China in one document they found. He said that there was multiple passports for different people, like showing that they had passports for different countries, multiple identities. They were using an early version of the internet. It's 1987, right? So this is like super early. But they apparently were already using something close to what we would consider Wi-Fi, or at least a cabled internet kind of network for themselves to communicate. There was apparently, Martinez says that they saw instructions from other Finders members on how to avoid the police that made it clear that they were aware, hey, that the cops are coming to our place. Here's how to get out of town without them. So there had already been like a mad scramble of people leaving. And Martinez says he also saw pictures of naked children and suggested positions that there was this room that looked like it was being used for shooting some sort of videos and scenes. And so a number of different things that he reports and filed in his customs report after that raid. Now, what happens from there is that he's waiting to hear back from the Washington Metro Police. They collected all the evidence that day. I found one newspaper picture that shows them walking out with a bag of evidence that was probably destroyed or burned, or who knows where it's hidden now. But after that, Martinez basically becomes the only voice actually speaking out. The other agents who were in on the warrant and the walk through the warehouse, they claimed they didn't see any of the stuff that he did. They started bad-mouthing him, saying he's known for sticking his nose in places it doesn't belong, and basically just making him look crazy. And as he's waiting to try to hear back from the Washington Metro Police, he goes back there to the station and tries to talk to whoever's there. And he reports that he was told by somebody at the Washington Metro Police, he didn't say who it was, that the investigation had become an internal CIA matter, that the CIA had got involved in this investigation of the finders. And so that was the first investigation. As I said, it just totally disappeared in the mainstream. They tell everybody it was just a big misunderstanding. But Martinez never gave up. He started speaking loudly to congressman at the time, this guy Rose. I can't remember the other, but there was a few others that you can find quotes from back then that were apparently like actively investigating. That led to this 1993 subsequent investigation, but still they claim they found nothing. And subsequently, Martinez's career was destroyed. Like, he eventually was driven out for something totally unrelated, but he says it was politically motivated just to get him out of there. And so they had people file complaints on him saying that he had made stuff up, that he was lying. They pretty much just destroyed his career. And he continued to try to speak out. And I guess after 1993, he kind of went quiet. And when I was pursuing this documentary, I actually reached out to him and talked to him briefly via email. And he was going to be in the interview, but he got scared and he backed out.
Wow. So was he the only person to come forward on this case?
Well, there's another guy named Sergeant Brad Stitcher, who was quoted as saying that there was a cover-up going on, but he actually died around the same time. And he was only 40 years old. And they said, I've looked up his death records and found, like, okay, was it something weird? They claim that he got like sepsis of the liver or something. Like, and these kind of things, of course, could be faked, or who knows? I don't have any solid proof just yet, but it definitely is like suspicious that the only other guy who was quoted from within the Metro Department who was like, yeah, there's a clear cover-up going on, and he'd say he had evidence, that he ends up dying. And there's one other officer named Scott Hunt. I did a short podcast about him that was kind of like an addendum to my Finders documentary. He was one of the only other officers, because I was using newspapers.com and a bunch of old newspaper resources, which are great to find like historical stuff. And I was searching for like international reports, US reports, Florida-based reports, DC reports, all mentioning the finders in and around that time, and just finding a lot of these articles that probably hadn't been read in 30 years. And there's different quotes in there, things that they would like us to forget. And one of those is this officer, Scott Hunt, also saying that he believes that there was a cover-up going on. So he had like at least two different officers saying that there was a cover-up. Sergeant John Stitcher, he died. They supposedly unrelated. Scott Hunt is alive, and I've been able to track him down to a couple of places, but he doesn't seem interested in speaking up. Yeah. And that's the thing, is I think the people who really know or what they claim to have seen are probably scared out of their mind, honestly. So whenever I reached out to Martinez, I told him, like, hey, I'm going to make a documentary about the finders. I know that were the only person trying to speak out about this. At first, he was open to it. And he was like, yeah, I'll be willing to talk to you over the phone, but some things to be off the record. I was like, that's great. I just want to talk to you. And then I think he was like a Trump supporter or something, because I sent him my Jeffrey Epstein documentary I had just finished. I was like, oh yeah, here's a sample of some of my work. And the documentary does have a picture of Trump and Epstein, and it explores that area. And I think it triggered him, because 10 minutes later, he emails me back. He's like, never mind, I'm not going to be a pawn in somebody else's game. I just like flipped out on me and just was like, yo, dude, chill out. I was like, you're the only one that really can blow this open, man. Like, you said these things, if you stand by what you said, then like, speak out. And the last thing he said to me via email was, I've talked to a number of journalists over the years and nothing's ever come of it. So what difference is it going to make if I talk to you? I have no doubt that what I know happened, there will never be any accountability for what I know is happening. And so he definitely was still standing by his word and everything. And I don't know if I mentioned this in the documentary, but once I tracked him down and I was like, you know what, I'm making this documentary. I need to get this guy on camera. And he doesn't want to talk to me via email. Well, fuck it. I found out where he teaches Tai Chi classes on the East Coast, and went there and did a little scouting out with a friend of mine. I was like, hey, going in the building, like, hey, I'm looking to find out more about Tai Chi classes for my grandpa, because he just like elderly classes. And it was like, oh, can you tell me more about the instructors? And they're like, yeah, Mr. Martinez. Oh, is he in today? He's like, yep. So then I just sat outside waiting for him to walk out. I only had one 15-year-old picture of him, but I recognized him right away. And he came outside and I walked up and he had a Bluetooth earpiece and I think he was on the phone with his wife or something. I walked up and just introduced myself, said, "Hey, how are you doing, Mr. Martinez?" He started shaking my hand and I said, "I'm Derek Bros." And I think as soon as he recognized my name,
yeah,
I was like, "I'm the journalist that you've been emailing." He flipped out again and he's like, "Get the fuck away from me. Get the fuck away from you. Don't fucking come near." And he's like telling whoever's on the phone. And he's like, "It's that journalist. It's that journalist again." And I was like, "Dude, please." I backed up and I was like, "Please, man, like if you speak up, you can help blow this whole story open. If you still choose to speak up now." And he just mumbling and "Get the fuck away from me," jumped in his trunk and drove off. And that was that. He made a trip all the way over there for just for that purpose and fully knowing that he might totally reject me. But I felt like I couldn't make the documentary without at least trying to communicate with him. And I learned through my investigation too with the finders that one of the reasons he's probably skeptical is because 48 Hours, the TV show, they had one producer years ago that was investigating the finders and apparently did interview Martinez, but it never made it to air. Like it never aired. Like you can go through all the archives of 48 Hours. And I've tried to contact the producer that was working on it at that time and got no responses. But yeah, so apparently there was an interest at one point, but somebody, you know, said, never mind. And so I think he just kind of feels like he's retired. He's alive. They're leaving him alone for whatever he saw and knows. And I think he probably just is like feeling probably like that's the best thing for him instead of getting back involved. But for me, I'm just like, damn it, dude, we need you to speak up.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. So I didn't know that. I thought there was more people, officers, different people that came out. I didn't realize it was only the really two and only one that said anything. That's crazy.
Other pieces of evidence. But yeah, as far as like officers, like actually saying, "Hey, this is a cover up. There's something going on." It was only a few that we know. There may have been others that saw things and chose to be quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So then you were saying you interviewed two times the one of the founders of the actual cult. What was that all about? How is that?
Yeah, so it was kind of creepy at first, honestly.
Yeah.
It was in like this little attic above this. So, okay, here's one of the weird things is in the finders, when you start looking up the history, first, maybe I should explain a little more. They're called the finders because they collect finders fees. Allegedly, again, the mainstream story is these are just a bunch of eccentric old hippies, former hippies, beatniks that in the 70s and 80s were there was all these guru movements and cult movements and stuff like that. And they weren't one that was particularly drug focused. They were like hyper organized and hyper getting shit done. And so Marion Petty, who's the founder, who comes out of Air Force Intelligence, whose wife worked for the CIA, whose son worked for the CIA, but claimed that once he retired, he never had anything to do with the intelligence community. But he said that he was tasked with going out there and trying to connect with youth movements. He mentioned the human potential movement, the futurist movement, some of the things that people like Epstein and others were also into. And just he says that he had a house that would be regularly visited by spooks like CIA agents and hippies and travelers. And he's like, "Yeah, I hosted all kinds of these people in the 50s and 60s and up to 70s and 80s. So it's just this house of like eccentric people. He has the nickname the game caller or the stroller, the walker, because sort of the way it worked is they got all these people to a lot of cults attract people who are unstable or maybe just they're easily taken advantage of or whatever. But he got all these people to put their money into what they called, I think it was the information bank or something like that. And it was like, okay, everybody give me all your money, basically put all your money into this community and we'll all just live freely and it'll be wonderful and great. And so people did, including Robert Terrell, the guy I interviewed, who was his right-hand man, who, according to him, he shared the same toothbrush with Marion Petty for 25 years. That's how close they were. Came in. The way he tells his story is that he was like a middle-aged suburban man with a wife and two kids. And then I guess around the 70s and 80s, he starts having some shift or some awakening or I don't know, falls in love with Petty or something, but he decides to leave his wife, leave his kids and literally just go join this cult and give him like his whole life savings and just commit his whole life to it. And like I said, he becomes the spokesman. Whenever he was giving press conferences around the arrests, he would put a Ronald Reagan mask on the back of his head and then talk to the crowd, like with the back, like he just weird shit like that. So that guy ends up being the right-hand man. And after Petty dies, like I said, he's sort of now still carrying on. They say the finders is over, but we also have documentation from the cops that said that there's specific statements from one of the final reports that got declassified. I don't know if I mentioned this in 2018, actually after my documentary. I don't know if it's any coincidence or what, but the FBI randomly started dropping FBI documents or finders documents. They did, what did they do? They did three different dumps starting October 2018 till February. And some of it was stuff that some of us researchers have already seen, but some of it was brand new information and just more corroboration. And one of those documents includes a police report saying that this sergeant, whoever wrote it, it was redacted, saying, "We do not trust that this group is actually going to break up as they claim." He's like, "We found documents of the Finder's master plan where they discuss breaking up into different splinter groups and renaming themselves, but never really stopping what they're doing as far as organizing." And so this particular police report was just saying, "We should keep our eyes on these people. They're not going to just disband." And so there was definitely a lot of implications of all this stuff happening. And Terrell played the role of just downplaying it all. And so, as I said, when I interviewed him the first time in 2018, I didn't really know many of the facts. I just, okay, I had some basic questions and I let him say his thing. And that was a good enough interview, but I had the chance to go back just a few months back and kind of drill him a little bit further. And then also he wanted to drill me and he was pissed off. He definitely didn't like the documentary. But me and him, I actually included all this in my interview. You can find it at theconsciousresistance.com. I'll give you guys the link to share it. But he pretty much starts off like our conversation when I was recording this too, just giving me a lecture about being a good journalist and just this kind of, just this real manipulative sort of way of, this is just conspiracy theory. I can't believe, I thought we had a good rapport. And then you totally take it this direction. Because all I said in the documentary was like, I played his statements. Here's what he says. We've never been connected to intelligence agencies. We don't have it. This is preposterous, blah, blah, whatever. But then I also do notes. Okay, his statements conflict with what the Tallahassee police report says. The Tallahassee medical police report, the first people to inspect the children, they found that at least three kids showed signs of sexual abuse. Mary had her hymen broken and something had penetrated her. That one of the kids, he had, what the hell is it called? Like a rectal prolapse where he couldn't hold his bowels in because of, they said, more than likely from sodomy. There was these things that the police report showed that contradict what he claims. And so I could sit there across from this guy objectively as a journalist, interview him, like, this guy might be a pedophile. Like, this guy might be involved in some crazy shit, but I'm going to give him his chance to say what he's got to say. And so, yeah, but he started off by really just wanting to lecture me about this is not what a good journalist does. Like, you need to trust your own intuition and this and that. And yeah, he really tried to downplay things. So I had to push back from him a little bit and just say, hey, man, like, this isn't just me making shit up. Like, I'm referencing police documents, right? Again, like, you can tell me this is all preposterous. It's so crazy. And some of the answers he gave were just, in my mind, very reaching. Like, at one point, because he knew that me and my partner Miriam that were into meditation, and when we met him, we were traveling for a tour doing meditation. And so one of the answers he gave me in 2018 was something like, being a yogi or a meditator is a lot like being an intelligence agency. Because it just starts giving this weird, I'm like, what are you, he's trying to like make it make sense. And his, I don't know, it just really was weird. And so the second time around, again, I gave him his chance and he said, but I was able to this time say, okay, look, man, I know you say this, but I just reviewed the police documents and they say this. So either you're expecting me to believe you and say that Ramon Martinez just made up this whole thing, this other officer, he must have just made up, oh, that guy, he had an excuse for pretty much everything. And I think this is the way they set up the story. Because again, the first thing they'll say about Martinez, oh, that Martinez guy, he lost his job later, right? He was discredited, this and that. It's because they came after him. And now it's a convenient thing to say, oh, yeah, that guy's not credible. He's not worth trusting. Oh, and that other guy, well, that was the first report they wrote. They did an updated report afterwards, and that said something different. He had an answer for every little thing.
So, Derek, what does he say that they're actually, like, the purpose of the cult or the group that I'm sure he would call it a group, not a cult. What was he saying? Did he give you a purpose of why they were even a group?
So it kind of comes back to this game caller thing. Again, the game caller is one of the nicknames. Actually, Toby Terrell, his book, which you can still find out there on the Finders, which, again, to me seems like a sort of, this is our official history, we want you to know kind of book. Right. It's called The Game Caller. And it actually has one of the only pictures of Marion Petty, the founder, that is known to exist. We have not been able to find any more pictures of him. He was clearly an intelligence agent, involved in intelligence agencies till his death, even though he said otherwise. But they claim that they are, again, just like coming together. They really try to frame themselves as if they were the progenitors of the unschooling, homeschooling movement. They're like, we were trying to, this is like what he says to me in the documentaries, the last thing we would have done is hurt these kids. We were trying to show them what it's like to live a different kind of lifestyle where they're not stuck in the structures of things that, like, yeah, our people like us are like, yeah, that makes sense. I get it. But it doesn't really match what they were seemingly really up to. But that's the way they try to play it off, is like, they're just, oh, like, for example, whenever they first got the kids, they were having trouble identifying who the moms or who the parents were. And the kids, I didn't mention this, the kids had no idea what TV was, what Blender was, like really basic, quote unquote, modern things, because that was just the way they were choosing to raise them, like outside of that. That's kind of interesting. But they were totally seemed clueless about just what was going on. And they weren't sure who exactly was their parents within the group. So the kids were clearly getting passed around in, I don't know what kind of ways, but it took a week or more for them to identify who the real mothers of the kids were. And they got some people to claim, yeah, we're the mothers. They're okay to be with these men. The men claimed originally, oh, we were on the way to taking these kids to a school in Mexico for intelligent minds. That was their cover story for wherever they were really going. But yeah, and so Terrell tries to deny all of the allegations and essentially says they were just this eccentric group. They formed around Petty. And pretty much what would happen on a daily basis is they would say, game caller, can you call a game? To him, and he would literally just give them assignments. And what I think was going on is that there was the inner circle that really knew what was going on, and maybe a sort of outer circle that made it appear like sort of innocuous. Oh yeah, we're just get together and do weird things. And some people knew what they were doing and some people didn't. So he would do things like, okay, your mission today, Mike, is to go out and find a bar of gold, a red robe, and a basket of oranges. Just random shit like that seemed totally random. Or he would give them like, here's $500, go to San Francisco, come back with the finest chocolate you get. Just whatever, like random things that these were their tasks, their games that he would give them. And then they would go do them. And they try to come up with some half-baked theory about, oh, this challenges the brain and the way that you think and this and that by just, you never have expectations because every day you're going to go do something random. But it does seem to be that they were an intelligence outfit. Back to them being called the Finders and the Finders Fees. They claim to be just like, well, yeah, we're eccentric people. We live together. We have this lifestyle. But some of us during the day, we're journalists or we're researchers, so we can make, you know, a living. And so I started to look into some of them. They've definitely been like writers in different magazines that had to do with technology since like the 80s and 90s. Some of them directly work with the intelligence community, like from the private sector still to this day. So a lot of these people that are accused of being involved in this, their names are still out there. They're still available because one of the documents I came across, there was a leaked and it's been verified. It's definitely an accurate list, or at least it was at one point. But they basically got doxxed. Somebody put out on it's kind of a long story, random chain of events that I was doing. As I was making the documentary and I was starting to get into some of this creepier territory, some of my followers were suggesting like, hey, just for your safety, you should put some of this stuff out publicly and don't wait to the end. So I started doing seven or eight part public investigation that led to the documentary. And one of those was just going down this rabbit hole of this random, as I was scouring the internet for Finder stuff, I found this Yahoo Groups post from like 2006. And it was about these people sharing a story of meeting this couple, and the couple was wanting to rent a house from them in Florida or something like that. But there was something off about the couple and they weren't really sure. So then they started doing research and they realized, oh my God, these people are in this group, the Finders Cult. And they lay out the whole history of the Finders Cult. And this person, whoever put this out there, was doing some mad research, and they ended up actually here. I found a complete list of all the former members of the Finders. And so that I was able to track down some of them. And yeah, I see some of them are still doing quote unquote journalism. Some of them are still involved in various aspects of the intelligence kind of industry. But that also led me down this rabbit hole of one of the man's name was Stuart Silverstone. And I don't know. I don't claim to know what the hell any of this means, but it starts with a tweet with a hash that needs to be deciphered. That leads to a YouTube video link. That YouTube video link plays some really creepy MK Ultra type shit, like lights flashing, colors, like name, just weird symbols and stuff. Yeah. People start deciphering symbols within that video, and there was also a hash below in the description. Those lead to a Twitter account that leads to this kind of chain for a few steps. Ultimately, it leads to this video where Stuart Silverstone, one of the members of Finders, is commenting, and he posts another hash. That was solved, and it ends with the question, who will find what the Finders hide, which is what I call my documentary, because I wanted to sort of just say, hey, whoever put that out there, I don't know what the purpose was, but somebody will know why I chose that name. And there's so many weird shit like that. I'm actually, I'm glad I saved those videos because I was checking the other day, actually, and most of them are dead now. They've all been taken down from the internet, and it's pretty hard to find any of them. So, yeah, but there was definitely some weird shit going on, and different people have come across the finders and have recognized that they are more than what they claim. But, yeah, they just would say, we're just here living eccentrically. We all share sexual partners. We raise the kids communally. We unschool them. And then every now and then we go on these random tasks for Marion Petty that he sent us on, right? And I think what was going on is that some people were performing tasks that they probably knew what they were involved in. Others may have just been doing real just random shit just so that they just think it's a game.
I was just going to ask you that. If your gut, when even speaking to this gentleman, if your gut was like, was he just a pawn? Did he know? Well, maybe he was just some kind of strange guy. Like, what did your gut tell you?
With Robert Terrell, I don't think there's, and I did ask him this as well. I asked him directly. I said, okay, you tell me you were best buddies with this guy for 25 years. You shared his toothbrush and all that stuff. You were his right-hand man. Is there any way that he was involved in the intelligence community and you didn't know? And Robert Toby Terrell's like, no, there's no way. There's absolutely no way that he could have been involved in that, this and that. But then at the same time, if you watch the documentary, like, the follow-up question, I pretty much get him to admit, like, okay, well, he did have some intelligence connections, but that was, it's so I caught him trying to be less than honest at least a couple of times where he didn't know how much information I had. And so I do think that he's still covering up whatever they're doing. And I'll say this, that again, the accusations, there was satanic accusations, there was child sex trafficking accusations, there was intelligence community accusations. The way that I order them on a level of most credible to least is that the most credible, which we absolutely have evidence for 100%, is that they were connected to the CIA, the Foreign Counterintelligence Agency, and more than likely Chinese government involvement as well. That's for sure. There's close connections that they can't deny. There's at least two or three different police documents that make that clear. There's the statements of that Martinez was told he was being taken over by the CIA as an internal matter. There's multiple things like that. So that's 100% true. To what extent? We don't know. Of course, they sit there and they still deny any of this. The other thing, because there's also another document that says something to the effect of the finders originated as a project of the CIA, but they had gone rogue. So it seems like I could have just been a cover story for them trying to cover their own ass. Oh, yeah, we were involved with it at one point, but then it started doing crazy things. Or they've known whatever crazy things it was up to the whole time. It's been state sanctioned and they were just trying to create a cover story. But that's 100% true. The child trafficking accusations, I think there's definitely strong evidence of that. Like I said, there's clear signs of abuse from the kids that I don't know why little kids would make up some of the things that they said. And the evidence, I don't know why the doctor would just make it up. I think it's convenient that Toby Terrell can say, yeah, but that was the first medical report. And then you see a couple of days later, they got another medical examiner to come in and he said, oh, there was no signs of any of that. So in my mind, it's like, that's when the cover-up starts beginning, right? Like different people being brought in and stuff. So there's clear signs of that. There's what Martinez saw. There's just the level of coordination organization that the finders had, again, using this early version of the internet to communicate, having passports to places like Vietnam, North Korea, Russia, places that most Americans weren't allowed to get into at these times, thinking during the Cold War and stuff. They all had passports from multiple places like that. There was international travel, and if it was involving children, then that's what we would consider trafficking. And if there are signs of sexual abuse, then I think there's at least something to warrant more of an investigation. Unfortunately, it's just been covered up. And then the satanic accusations, I think are the least credible. Not to say that I don't think that those agendas don't exist. I do think that there are people who, whether they call themselves Luciferian or satanic, that have different occult agendas. But from what I've read, and again, like, we don't have the full truth. I have 3-hour videos on my website of when these FBI documents were first released, where I'm just like, all right, we're going to do a deep dive live. And I just go through page by page, reading every mundane detail. And so much of it is redacted. So there's still a lot of unknowns. But some of the main accusations related to the satanic thing were because there was, a picture of, and again, this could be something bad. It could be, I don't know, a picture of the kids. The kids were wearing white robes, white sheets, and the adult were wearing the white robes, and they were holding like a goat, like that they just cut its throat. And there was like blood on people, and they're like, okay, well, this is just an example of us teaching our kids how to raise animals and how to kill their own animals. And maybe it could be a version of that, right? It could be something else. But that was kind of where one of the accusations came from. And I don't think that's strong enough to really say anything. And then the other one was that outside of the finder's house or the warehouse, there was a trail that went into the park, and it led to a circle of stones that could have been for a fire. It could have been for a million different things, right? But it's like those kind of claims. I never really found any, in this specific case, anything to warrant, okay, there was definitely some occult element going on. Again, maybe that part was even more hidden than what we've been able to find. But yeah, I definitely know they were connected to the intelligence community. There was some involvement with trafficking children from one location to the other, and more than likely sexual abuse going on. And it's been totally covered up. And there are increasingly few people who could do anything about it, because they're all dying or they're all retiring or moving on and choosing silence or whatever. So it's been, that's why when I found the story at first, I was like, oh yeah, I've heard kind of whispers in the conspiracy community about the finders over the years. Yeah. But I hadn't really, until I did my own research, realized like, holy shit, this is like such an open and closed case, like clear evidence, 100% documented right here. This isn't like Epstein or some other cases that people speculate about. This is, we've got the documents. We've got clear, strong evidence here to go off of. And to me, it's like, wow, that's, if you could get people to pay attention, which is what I try to do with the documentary, then it's just another sign that these kinds of things have been going on. And not only have they been going on, but they've been state sanctioned and state protected for at least the last 30 years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I'm thinking too with the satanic stuff, like that time period too in the 80s, like a lot of satanic panic that would get headlines. That's like, threw a lot of stuff in with, say, everyone was a devil worshiper in the 80s or so. And that, but some little stuff that I've heard through conspiracy circles or free thinking circles is the well-dressed men always stood out to me. Like, why were they well-dressed men with all these ungroomed kids? And I did hear a little bit about the satanic stuff, but not much. So I just, it's such an interesting, scary, but interesting story. And there is so much to it that hasn't gotten out. Appreciate all this work that you put into this, man, because this is something that definitely we need to know more about.
Well, and I want to say to you, I'll send the link to you guys, and anybody who wants to check it out, what I did was I have a mega account that I created, a public downloadable file that has literally, you can download my documentary, you can download all my original interview with Toby Terrell, the first one and the new one. You can download a file that has all the Washington Metro Police documents, the Tallahassee Police documents, everything that I found, every newspaper clipping, every interview, audio. I even had people trying to discourage me from looking to the finders as I was going. This is why I knew, I was like, okay, I'm getting into something, because there was a couple times where we were uncertain. Like, did we leave that window open? Did somebody come in the house? Things that were enough that up where I was like, because I started to just be realistic about it. So I don't think I'm a big, huge threat, right? But let's say who's ever assigned to watch Ramon Martinez to make sure he stays quiet, and whoever else is assigned to kind of keep a wraps on this finder story, they definitely were taking notice that I was flying around the country trying to interview people, going to visit these ex-members of finders. I'm sure that whoever Toby Terrell still has communication with, the moment we got, you know, we finished our interview and I left, he called somebody to let them know that somebody was poking around. And so I'm sure that there would be people, anybody who's concerned about the story gaining relevance again, would be keeping tabs on it. And I definitely called a lot of different people. I've called so many people related to the case and had people turn away. I've talked to other journalists who, for one reason or another, became convinced that, oh, there's nothing there, it's all a lie. People who some of us other researchers think might have been corrupted, that like literally flipped and went from investigating the finders to then believing their story overnight. I had this guy, Fred Burks, I want to say is his name. I don't really know much about him, but I suspect he has more importance than I know at the moment. But he is this dude who apparently used to be a translator for George W. Bush, if I remember correctly. He served in the Bush cabinet to some degree, and I don't think he was like any kind of big power player, but he was definitely somebody who had that connection. And he randomly contacted me while I was making the Finders documentary and said, hey, I saw you're in the process of doing this. I just want to let you, I'm also a researcher, I've done this work, blah, blah, whatever. He's like, and I started to look into the finders, and in the end, it turns out like it was just a big misunderstanding. He's like, I'm actually friends with one of the guys that got arrested. There was the two men, like I said, the well-dressed men. And he's like, and I just happened to sit down and I talked with him, and I said, you know what, let's just clear the air. I'm going to record a conversation with you in case it ever is relevant. So it was like super convenient. This guy is just hitting me up like totally out of blue. By the way, hey, I heard you're investigating this. I talked to the guys. There's nothing to it. And he sent me an audio recording of his conversation with this Finders member. And it doesn't address any of the points, like the major points. It's just, oh, yeah, it's silly conspiracy theorists. And he tells the story from his side of view. But anyways, I basically told that guy, I was like, I appreciate you, but I think I'm going to continue doing my work. And I continued on. But just things like that where I was like, okay. And I've come across other things with that guy, Fred Burks, I believe is his name. And I'm not sure he's who he portrays himself as. And I just thought it was odd that, okay, why are people randomly...
Yes.
Encouraging me to just stop.
I already did that work. I have nothing to look into.
Yeah, exactly. That was what I was getting.
Yeah. Wow. Did you ever feel, were you ever in fear at all? Did you have anything weird happen?
Other than, like I said, a couple of times where there were some windows and things that seemed to have been opened and little things like that. But yeah. I think that I probably felt the most, like I said, the most aware of the potential danger when I went to go visit Martinez, because it's okay. For one, I'm committing to, this is all coming out of my own pocket. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to fly halfway across the country. And the reason I thought it was worth doing is not only because he wouldn't talk to me via email. I kept trying to call him every couple of weeks. And it gets to the point of, okay, now I'm just harassing somebody. I need to back off, right? Like, he's not going to. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe if I show up in person. I started doing research and I literally find out that the place he teaches Tai Chi is like 15 minutes from one of my good friends, the co-author of my first three books. And I was like, dude, I have to come see you. And will you come with me to stake out this gun? And so me and my friend were out there just totally. And it was definitely one of my first sort of journalistic stakeouts. And especially in this situation, where I'm like, this guy has some knowledge that people are trying to keep quiet. And he's chosen to stay quiet now because he feels like there's no hope. Like he told me, I have no hope that anybody will ever be held accountable for what I know happened. That's exactly what he said. So he still stands by his story and he's just scared. And so when I was out there, I was definitely feeling that, like, not just the nerves of the whole situation, like how's he gonna respond, but also, like I said, if anybody's keeping tabs on the story and I'm traveling around the country to go try to interview the only people who are trying to blow the whistle about it, it's probably getting somebody's attention.
Yeah. Wow, that's fucking nuts, man. I can't wait to watch this documentary.
A lot of conspiracy theorists talk about how the internet will go down, right? How the internet's going to go down someday. Is it as simple? Is it something that can happen?
The internet go down? Oh yeah, totally. It's fragile.
Right? It is.
Yeah, it's just cables. You just cut the cables, and then boom! All of a sudden, you've lost access to another country.
Okay, so it's something that totally could happen. Okay. Yeah, it seems like the government or whatever, the elites, they've wanted to manufacture culture forever, right? You go back looking at even just music or whatever. They've hijacked, and now they have the best tool in the world. If they have this tool, it would be so easy just to hijack and change history and hijack culture. So it's so easy for them. It's nuts. What do you think? Why do you think that the shooter from yesterday, his videos are still up on YouTube? That's very curious to me.
Right. Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to... they're trying to de-radicalize people by turning the hatred from the state to each other. They did the same thing in Iraq, and eventually they figured out that these terrorist attacks were actually controlled by Britain. And there's this great story that I heard about how they finally got wise to it and they wouldn't let the terrorist go. And the British came in with tanks and broke into the prison and set the guy free because it was like their guy. Oh. And essentially what we got to realize is whoever that shooter was, because I don't believe that it was that guy. They're trying to say, oh, this guy's so hateful. We got to realize that whoever the shooter was, we couldn't identify him because he was wearing a gas mask. He shot people and then he disappeared. He happened to get away in the middle of New York with a bunch of cameras.
Yeah.
Are you freaking kidding me? That's the sign right there. When someone does attack on a large group of people and then gets away. Like, no, that doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
A surveillance society.
Doesn't happen.
Which is what we're living in now. So
he
gets away and now they've got some patsy who had a naughty YouTube channel full of hatred. So they're going to pin it on this guy and they're probably going to just not allow him to interact with the public because they need to keep the scam going. And it's probably unclear whether this guy is actually in on it or not. It doesn't really matter. The thing is that the whole thing is, it's obviously a laughable clown circus, partially staged, I would imagine a lot of the victims might have been stage actors, because why actually go to the bother of shooting real people? Their families are just going to try to investigate. If anything, there's a bunch of actors on. Some guy in a gun comes in, releases a smoke grenade, shoots some people, and then the people, like, there's a circus over them, but they weren't actually real. So now they don't actually have any families that are trying to investigate and figure out, oh, well, why did the FBI know about this guy and not let anyone know? Right. Those are the hard-hitting questions that an obsessed family that has a family member that dies, they're going to go down that whole rabbit hole. So my prediction is that the people that were actually shot were just like part of the show.
It's unbelievable. They're just giving us this. The videos are, the tapes are gone. It's unbelievable. And they're saying all of them, like I said before, I get tickets all the time in the city for going through the wrong lane, or, and it's literally within a couple of days you get the ticket. Another story that happened when I would say it's about, I think it was the year 2000. So it was before smartphones. Two buddies of mine got into a fight on the subway, right? They got into a fight. They thought it was just a regular fight. These are city kids. Things like this happen. They just thought it was a regular fight. They get off the train, they're bleeding, and they're just at a bodega washing themselves off, cleaning up. And then, like they said, within 5 minutes, 20-30 cop cars surrounded them. They found them, right? And this is before we had the surveillance state, before everyone was taking pictures. And it became this whole political thing with Giuliani. And they said they changed the whole story that they attacked foreigners on the train, and Giuliani turned into this whole political thing when it was just really a fight. But my point is, they caught them in New York City before we had all this surveillance.
Yeah.
My buddy said it was like he was literally washing the blood off his hands at a bodega that was, I forget how many stops down. I think the fight happened in Manhattan, and they might have been in Queens when they got caught. But it's, come on, they got picked up that. They were like, they didn't understand why they were even getting arrested, because back then fights happened in the city. It was no big deal. And no one was really that hurt. But come on. And that was this little nothing. Now, this is a guy that was unloading. They're saying that he had all these kinds of weapons, and even the on the ground, like we only have a couple shots of everything, which I still find very interesting too, that people, that's just probably just about society, how crazy everyone is and how hypnotized they are with the phones, where you see a couple of people just like literally texting as it's going on. You're like, what? No one's running. There's a couple guys just literally just texting, like kind of moving out of the way. That's totally nuts. I think that's more of people just becoming zombies to their phones, but it's just nuts. How many more times are we going to just be like, oh, there's no camera footage? Epstein, no cat, and it's just, and everyone's okay with it. I don't understand why we don't have the pushback.
The thing is that it's getting more circusy, and it seems to me that it's getting harder for these intelligence services to pull off these terror attacks, because people are like getting wise to this, right? Because it's harder to hide.
Yeah,
because you have to disable so many cameras now.
Yeah,
and the amount of cameras you're going to need to disable on average in the future is going to go up by like an order of magnitude, because it's going to be like everywhere is going to be able to show that. That like when the guy goes away, right? In the future, there's just going to be all these cameras everywhere. We're going to be able to like just follow him and see where he goes, right? And if it's a false flag, we're going to be like, why did he go into an FBI car? And so I think that with these terror attacks that they're doing, it seems that they took a break. It seems that they're back on now. And in order for them to continue doing these, they're going to have to get a lot more control over remote cameras, a lot more control over people taking video with their iPhones. That's going to be a really hard thing. Yes. Think how weird that's going to be when a terror attack happens and then everyone's cell phones like has a bug together and deletes all the footage that day. That's what's going to eventually have to happen. And people are going to be talking about that. There's going to be these urban legends. And at this point, I don't know how they're going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle. Like it's too much out there. Cernovich is on Twitter calling this out as a false flag.
Yeah,
that's what he say exact. Yeah, let's do a thread. If mass shooters the FBI had previously been aware of, I'll start. The Pulse nightclub shooter was reported to the FBI. Although he lied to the agents, he was set free. His dad had also been a longtime FBI asset/informant. Your turn. And let's see if I can actually share this screen. Yeah, right here. Look at this. Right. And I'm like, yes, the people are waking up. This is exactly what is going on. We need to understand that they're doing terror attacks. They've done the regimes around the world have done this. This is not a new thing, right?
Yeah.
This was reported in communist Russia too. They did false flag attacks against their own people. Hitler did them. The Gulf Biden
of Tonkin
regime
is known, right? We know about the Gulf of Tonkin. We know about Yes, absolutely. It's funny how false flag a couple years ago, you were a nut if you used those words. Now the news, now the mainstream uses the term false flag.
Right.
So in a way, it's like maybe things, it's a positive way to look at it, like you're saying. And I do believe that the internet in a way, that's why sometimes I wonder, that's why I asked you if it would be so easy just to shut the internet off. I was hoping you were going to say no. I was hoping you were going to say no, it would be too hard. Because I think the internet, as much as it's a tool to control us, it also has gotten away from them quite a bit. Same with the surveillance. Like I always think about someday I believe that there'll be like some kind of app where you can literally just search anything that anybody ever said, took pictures of on everyone's phone. Right.
Yeah.
Like I always think about that idea and I kind of live my life that way too. Like I try to, not that I do too much wrong, but it's like, I think that I'm being filmed almost at all times and that whatever I put on my phone could be there forever. And that's scary, but it's also, if we all have access to something like that, which I do believe will happen someday, it's going to be a lot harder to pull this stuff off.
Right.
I think it's already getting there. If you look at Las Vegas, right, that was a disaster. I think that was your first litmus test on what the fuck with all the cameras and trying all the fuckery of saying, oh, this camera didn't work or that. When you had thousands of people and different recordings and they kind of just buried that story. It's like people definitely caught on too much. There was too many people speaking out on it. And it kind of, that story just went away, which if you think about it, it's something that should have stayed in the news a lot longer. It's a crazy event. And I have to say, I think that you're right about this. They'll probably just do that as well. They'll probably just kind of bury this one because I don't see much. Yesterday was everywhere. Obviously, when something happens in the New York area, it's on every radio station. Every person on air is talking about it because it's live. It's happening right now. But I don't see as much. I thought it would be flooded today. And it's kind of like already kind of moved over. Now, I don't know if that's because people haven't died, which is also pretty interesting. That nobody died, that kind of also leads me to think about, like you were saying, crisis actors or whatever. I don't know, man. That it's really nuts that that people should be questioning more. And another thing I was going to ask you about is I do notice that people do question, and then you see, to me, it looks like almost bots right away, like you're a lunatic. Right away. Anyone writes anything? And there's a lot of people writing, but right away, like just you're a nutcase.
How plausible is that technology? Is that actually out there? Is that legend? Are there actual bots that are being deployed in that way, Zach?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, it's on Reddit. It's on Twitter. If you do a bunch of posting on those platforms, you'll run into them. And they pretty much come out in force right when something is new and they're still trying to correct the narrative as it gets derailed. But at this point, it seems that everyone's getting so smart at what's going on to their tricks that they really can't derail the narrative. Like they try to derail it every single time, but then it just keeps on going and they can't really stop it. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah. With the bots, Mark, I'm sure you've seen it, but like when they'll expose like the same comment written about what we just saw with the pandemic, right? Where it'd be like the same exact comment. Oh, my mother works in the hospital. My sister works in the hospital. I'll say whatever. And it's literally just the same comment over and over again. I think that would be proof with different usernames. I think that's proof right
there. What's interesting is that copy and paste may go away here pretty soon with all this advanced AI that's coming out. There's a conversational AI called GPT-3. I use it when I program. It's amazing. And pretty soon it's going to be these bots with intelligent human-like conversational tactics. And this is really the scary thing because if Twitter allows these bots on their platforms, which they will, then pretty much any space that is human-centric is going to be overrun by these AIs. And pretty soon my prediction is that people are going to want social media sites where bots are not allowed or strictly labeled as bots. Because if you don't know, then something like QAnon may happen where everyone is, oh, there's like a secret plan. And it turns out that it's just some sort of psyop. And that's the thing that scares me is I feel that QAnon may be restarted through an AI. And that AI will just monitor the internet and make posts and it'll sucker people into an ideology. But what's worse than just that is that there will be like 10 of them. It's so people are going to be fractured into incompatible ideologies and they'll be like psyop, like effed in the head because of that. And look, like there's this badge that I put on Twitter, which was like, haha, you've been screwed by psyops because physical wounds heal. I was like, whoa, right? That's kind of interesting that psyop wounds would be worse than physical ones.
I feel like I've been through a million psyops. I go into researching things knowing that, okay, this could be a psyop, but let me look more into something.
Right.
I love this whole Tartaria conversation, but it could be a psyop. I got to be in that stance all times, just looking at something and thinking, okay, this could be a psyop. And then as far as Q, I mean, some people think that Q might've been AI. Obviously you would be way more, you would know a lot more if that's even a possibility than I would. But I've heard that a couple of times that maybe it was AI. Regardless, obviously, I think most people know at this point it was a psyop for sure. There are some people that are still hanging on to it. That's a little nuts, but there are. To think about, that's really scary what you're saying. To think that there'll be a bunch more Q-type things coming out, almost dividing people even more, right? What if there's a Q that comes out that are more for the left?
Yep.
I can see that. Totally can see that coming, right?
You see it happening with the podcasting community. Just the way podcasts are disseminated is sort of backed up in a RSS way to be decentralized already. But in the same flip of the hat, you have these small communities being formed that aren't aware of the other communities that are like crabs in a bucket. We're all in the same situation. We're all talking about the same things. I could see how a bot can come in and start to turn these groups against each other when essentially they're all sort of doing the same thing.
Yeah, totally.
Especially if they can start calling you and interacting with you in the semi-physical world, right? So basically it's like, how far will these AIs go into LARPing in the real world? And you could get pretty sucked up into a metaverse, which is what they have in store for us, is lock us in a prison of the mind mediated through our cell phones. And it sucks because everyone's on their cell phones now all the freaking time.
Now, how much of manipulation into, because we hear about things like gang stalking and stuff, but I've wondered, is it possible for them to surveil someone's life for a period of time and then strategically fuck with them? Let's say I have a best friend and then they just start blocking my texts and my calls unbeknownst to the two of us. I think I'm trying to reach my best friend who's ghosting me. He thinks I'm not hitting him up at all. Pretty soon we're not friends anymore because our whole friendship is based around this phone. Is that how insidious you're talking with this ARG? No, in a paranoid sort of way, I've imagined it happening, but no, this is just a thought experiment.
Wow. Right. Try to destabilize people by triggering their paranoia. Paranoia is a really
Or just isolating them from the people that they're close with, because the way our lives are structured now, if my friend and I don't live in the same town, we may never cross paths outside of this electronic medium. So how easy would it be for an outside force to come in and start to isolate somebody? And then to them, it doesn't feel like they're being shadow banned from their friendship, but essentially that technologically is going on. I probably sound like a big paranoid loner right now, but yeah, I mean, I think that's what they try to push people to, especially when you're putting this kind of content out there. When they shadow ban content creators, they try to give you the impression that, oh, nobody's looking at your stuff. And again, there's the flip side of that where it's somebody who doesn't have an audience and they're using that as an excuse to justify why nobody's looking at their stuff. But yeah, I think in that Black Mirror sort of way, it's going to start to brush up against people's actual lives and not just their electronic lives.
Right. Or how about someone that's a content creator and then all of their viewers are fakes? So they think that they're doing really good stuff and they're popular, but it turns out that no one's actually watching them. No one's actually finding them. And it's just a bunch of bots.
They just waste their time.
I was just thinking the same thing, man. I was just thinking about how I know of, I got to be careful not to call anyone out, but I know of, like, in entertainment, let's say it's with ideal comedians. There are some out there that their following is just too big. It's huge, right? And I'm sure they paid for it, if I had to guess. I don't know but you could see their engagement. It makes no sense.
You mean like Twitter followers, Instagram followers, like that sort of thing?
What they have on their subs, let's say, whatever it is, across all of them, and then their retweets or their likes, they don't make any sense. They have the same as like someone like me who has a very small social media following. I don't give it much work, and it's, come on, man, you have, I don't know, 50,000 or 500,000 subs and this amount of retweets, it just makes no sense. Now they're probably paying for followers, right? Or paying bots to work or they don't have negative comments is very odd, where almost every comedian is going to get negative comments. It's just part of the job. And some of them don't. It's interesting. I think if you're paying someone, I guess they'll be plucking them too, or blocking. But I noticed that recently, like the other side of it as a business. I'm sure I've never been approached for that, but I'm sure if you're trying to make your money through clicks, get advertisers, right? You show them, sure, it would make sense to buy, to use the bots for your side. And it just seems weird to me. I've noticed that a lot recently.
Yeah, and there's like some things, like look at Out of Shadows, which was talking about like all the satanic stuff that was going in there. Like it got totally boosted by unknown sort of forces, and just everyone was pouring in. And why would that happen? Well, they want to take the truth and they want to inject noise. And so if they find someone that has this close, but has the wrong idea, I feel like they're going to boost that person up there so that the false information will disorient you and you won't really know what's going on. And the thing is that you don't actually need to control everyone if you have the mechanism to boost any voice that you want. And so if an intelligence service, like the puppet masters, are sitting behind the curtain, they're just like, okay, how do we like control the situation? Okay, this person's got too much truth. Let's turn them down. This person over there, they're crazy, but convincing. Let's turn them up. Right. Yeah. And that's going to be the future. It's literally going to be they're going to create live action role players out of us. And the ones that are searching for that money, they're just going to be like, oh, if I do this, then I get more money. And then the brain circuits in the path of reward just take over, and they're going to do the thing that makes them the most money. And then everyone else is going to see that person that is going to get all that money, and they're going to try to emulate that. And that's how people at scale get programmed, is that you don't have to do it to everyone. You just got to do it to the influencers.
Yeah.
And everyone will just copy the influencers, because that's what we do. We're herd animals. We have this thing called mimetic desire. And when we see other people doing stuff, we start desiring the things that they do, especially when we see them as successful.
Yeah.
So I think that this is it's really powerful. If they can pull it off, you can basically only give out favors to the people that advance your agenda. And anyone that else that doesn't, they get, I don't know, like their revenue shut off because they violated some community guideline of Google's ad tech system. Oh, wait a minute. That's already happened. It's not the
the
worst
beginning of social credit, right? Mm-hmm. The beginning of a social credit system, for sure. Well,
and that was our Freethinkers Society mashup. You can listen to each of those episodes in full. Check out the links in the episode description. And remember, sign up on Patreon or Substack if you're not already there for an ad-free version of every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, plus bonus episodes. Thank you for tuning in, and we will be back with episode 500 next week. We'll see you then. If you're not already signed up on Patreon or Substack, sign up now for early releases of episode 501 and episode 502, which will be released shortly.
Talking about AI these days, right? This season on Compiler, we're diving deep into how AI is reshaping the world we live in. Join us for a new season of Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guaranteed details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.